Welcome to NFL Total Access, the locker room. I am Mike Garofalo.
And I'm real Mike Rob Jeezy. We got a good one today. We got a hard-hitting safety on the show, man.
Yeah, it's three-time Pro Bowler and Super Bowl champion Antoine Bethea. And we will get into where that hard-hitting came from, because coming out of college, he was looked at as like a slight guy. But he didn't play slight. He played big. He also played with Peyton Manning. Really good story from Bethea on when he learned that Peyton Manning was, in his words, really the sheriff.
Yeah, and he went to Howard, right? A historically black college. And you know what? You won't believe, our listeners won't believe what he's doing for other top athletes to help get them into historically black colleges. You don't want to miss out.
All right, Mike Rob, we got another great one here. This is phenomenal. 14 NFL seasons for the safety. Antoine Bethea joining us right now. Antoine, welcome to the podcast here. And listen, we are excited to have you on, because I know you've got story after story. You don't play 14 NFL seasons without having story after story. So right off the bat, it is a rite of passage here on Total Access, the Locker Room podcast. We need a great locker room story. Now, as Mike Rob likes to describe it, we don't want the PG one. Right. We also don't want the X-rated one.
X-rated.
We want like PG-13 into R-rated. So give us your best one in that zone.
All right. Quick story, right? So we're going to the Super Bowl my rookie year. So Mike Rob, you've been, one or two Super Bowls?
I've been to one.
More than one. Okay. Yeah. So you know how it is, the week prior, you coming in, you're going to talk about all the due diligence leading up to the week with the tickets, the hotels, and all of that, right? So they say, look, you can bring your wife or your significant other.
Okay.
Cool. So I'm 21, fresh out of college. Look, I'm on this ride solo right now, but I'm going to the meeting. So this one, I realized Peyton was the man.
Okay.
So we sitting in the meeting. And, we kind of talking about the rooms and, guys like, look, you have a room, then we'll have another room for your family. And then the flow of a hotel is where you can kind of put the rest of your people at. So guys, sitting there with their wives and significant other, were like, well, I want my wife and my kids to stay in my room. And then, that additional room I got in the hotel, I would like to get that to my mother, my mother-in-law, whatever the case may be. I'm like, I'm sitting back. I'm like, that's a smart idea. We save some bread. So Peyton gets up. Bill Polian at the time, the GM. Mm-hmm. And Peyton gets up, say, hey, I really don't know if I want to have kids and wives on the same floor that I'm staying on leading up to the Super Bowl. Sitting back, I'm like, hey, that's another good idea, So Bill Polian, Jim Mersey say, hey, Peyton, all right, cool, we hear you. We're going to think about it. So goes next 10 minutes, talk about some other shit. Then Peyton Manning gets up again and say, Nah, that's how it's going to be. I don't want no kids, no wives on the floor that I'm sleeping on. So I say the same thing. So I'm looking at the guys. I'm like, okay, at least if I have my wife or my girlfriend here, I'm at least going to put up a little front nah, look, this is what I want. But I guess the guys knew. And I guess at that time, I knew he was a sheriff, but he was a sheriff for real. But that was one of the stories what I always think about. I'm like, yo, that's when I knew 18. He was the guy.
He is legit. So he totally took over the meeting. You know what? I rethought about it the last 10 minutes, guys. We ain't gonna have a family on the floor.
So I guess Pete was like, look, I gave y'all the opportunity to be like, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
We're not gonna have the wives and the kids on the same floor. But after they didn't come back, I guess in enough time, Pete was like, look, man, that's how we're gonna do it, man. So hats off to Pete. To this day, man, that's one of the realest things I've seen in the locker room.
All right, I gotta while we talk about Peyton, I gotta ask this, because I used to work with Reggie Wayne too. Reggie kind of told me that story. He was like, bro, we couldn't believe it. We was like, what? That's it. We just gonna roll with it, and he said we did because it's Peyton. You got any? You ever seen Peyton kind of on the sideline going through? You know whether he's pissed off. Like how does he handle the adversity, man? Like I feel like Peyton's always in control. You know what I'm saying? But I've never been his teammate like to see him actually be struggling and have to overcome it on the sideline. Does he get crazy on the sideline?
So I will say this, you know, I did see it, you know, it was a stretch where 18 wasn't playing Hall of Fame ball. I would say that, you know, and I think we all go through that, you know, we all go through that. It was just a stretch where it wasn't the typical P that we would see, you know, it went on for about like, I think it was probably like three weeks. And one day came in the meet room, and you can see it. You know, you can see it. And for me, I was like, all right, like, this guy is human. You know, he goes through it as well. But the way he was able to bounce back, man, and obviously be the leader as he always was, man, like, that was real. But definitely saw 18. It was a stretch there. I was like, well, damn. they got my guy right now. They got him right now. He's in a heavyweight fight right now. So – definitely saw it though.
You know, we remember those Colts teams for Peyton, and for the offense and for the weapons and all that stuff. You guys were a really fine defense though.
Yes,
I mean, you were a top 10 scoring defense for much of the chunk that you were there and Peyton was there. You know, was that side of the ball kind of saying, hey, you know, we don't want him to think, you know, they got to be a certain way. We're a complete team here, and we don't want to let them down. Was it kind of a give and take that way?
It was definitely that, you know, because, you know, you out there, you balling. You out there fighting, you clawing. Obviously, when you look at the offense, you think of the offense, think of Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark. So, obviously, you think about them putting them numbers up. But we always say, like, my rookie year, when we made that Super Bowl run, if it wasn't for our defense, I don't think we would have made that run. I know that year we were struggling against the run, but something clicked on. You know, we got Bob back, but we always talked about that. And even, you know, you kind of hear people say, you know, it was that bend but don't break type defense where, you know, offense get up, you know, 2 to 3 scores. And then, you know, we had 98 and 93 coming off the edge and we could go out there and fly around. But not on the defense side of the ball, we definitely thought that, like, you know, offense, they do their thing, but you know, don't forget about us on this side of the ball.
Yeah, man, and I agree with you. When that defense started to come on, that's when I'm like, okay, now the Colts are in a position to win the Super Bowl. I think the same thing happened to the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs. They were balling. All of a sudden, the defense started coming on late. Then all of a sudden, made the Super Bowl favorites, and they go win the Super Bowl. I'm gonna change gears a little bit, and talk about as you came into the league, 2006 with me, 2006 class. We were all in the same class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that class was awesome, bro. But you came from an HBCU, and just talk about that transition. How was it coming into the National Football League, coming from a HBCU, and especially knowing, like, now in today's football, you're getting kids in high school thinking more about HBCU. Just talk about your transition.
Yeah, man. It definitely was a transition for me. You know, going to a HBCU, we don't get the notoriety. We're not on TV. Obviously, you know, the campus, as far as facilities wise, you know, we're not there where, you know, where the PWIs are, the Power Fives are. So it was definitely a different path. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, scouts were coming in. Hey, your competition level is not there. And it's just a different outlook, I guess, as a scout has, you know what I mean? Because if you think about it, you go to a Miami or Florida State or whatever, Alabama, you know, them scouts are probably gonna get taken care of, but you come into an HBCU, it's going to be a different type of situation. You know, our locker room is in the basement of one of our dorms, you know what I mean? So it was a different type of situation. But for me, what I loved about it was just that grind, you know what I mean? Whereas my DB coach used to always tell me, look, AB, like, if you can play, if you can ball, they're going to find you. And I always just talked about the opportunity, right? Just give me an opportunity to get into camp so I can show you what I can do. You know what I mean? Again, regardless of where you're playing, you still got to run, you still got to tackle, you still got to put that work in. And as we forward to now and how, like you said, how you we looking at it now where, you know, you got the youngsters actually looking to go to HBCUs, you know what I mean? And actually realizing, like, you know, you're in charge. You know, it's not the university, it's not the institution, but it's the players. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the players.
PWI, a predominantly white institution, heard you mention that.
I went to a PWI. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I like to see where we at right now, especially with Prime. With Coach Prime doing what he's doing over at Jackson State. And then you got Eddie George over at Tennessee State as well, man. I think they're shining a bright light on HBCUs right now.
Well, speaking of the HBCUs, you've become involved in bringing the top flight athletes to these schools. Tell us about HBCU Jump.
Yeah, man, that was something that we started started maybe like a year and a half ago. And it was really something that kind of started on social media. It was some other HBCU alum from different schools. And, you know, we just started following each other and we all was kind of on the same page where we got to start talking about HBCUs more, what they have to offer, especially for, you know, black and brown young men and young women, you know, where you can go to a school and you're a majority one of the only times in life. So it was one of them things where regardless of what sport it was, football, basketball, volleyball, tennis, the swim team, we was going to put it out there across all social media platforms and all the followers that we had just to show the people that, look, you can go to a HBCU and whatever it is in life, you can be successful.
Well, you know, Twan, you're a Virginian, you know, like myself, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. We always rep it every single time I played, you know, or came to one of your games or you saw me, we always throwing up the VA. That's how it is.
Yeah.
Bro, like Mike Vick, Iverson, you, Marcus Vick. I mean, so many athletes down there, bro. Like, what's in the water down there, man? Let's keep it real. Keep it real, man. What y'all doing down there, man? Because 804 don't get the athletes y'all get. You know what I'm saying?
I'm still trying to figure out what that ingredient is, man.
Bottle it.
Honestly, man, like you say, that's kind of one of the things that's kind of been the running line back home. It's like something in the water. I'm not sure what it is, but I just know how guys grow up. Even the women, man, how the competition level is so tough out there. And I think nowadays where you kind of see a little shift where it's like, okay, I'm not doing good here. I'm not getting playing time here. Guess what? I'm transferring somewhere else. But I just felt as though when we was growing up, it was like, regardless of what the situation was, you got to make it happen.
Yep.
Because you got to make it happen. I just think it just kind of helped breed top competitors. And obviously, if you look at a Florida or California, Texas per square mile, we're not that big. But when, you know, when a young man or young woman leaves a 7-5 and go wherever they go to play, wherever they go to school, you can always stand firm on, like, they're going to show out. They from the 7-5-7, they're going to show out. So I don't know what it is. I'm still looking and trying to find somebody know what that ingredient is. But it's up, man, and it's a blessing, man, to be from that area.
Definitely, bro. And I mean to cut you off, geez. I just want to follow up with something because I'm in the community here in Richmond, VA, 804. Obviously, we've had conversations about it. You're heavily involved in that 757 Newport News community as well. I hear you're building basketball courts and things like that. Talk, you know, tell our listeners kind of how you're impacting that community down there.
Man, as you know, I never want to pat myself on the back. I just want to do my part.
There you go.
That's it. You know, obviously growing up in the areas that we grew up in, and the youngsters looking up to us, regardless if we like it or not, they look up to us. So, you know, we will always, you know, be happy that, okay, you know, I scored this touchdown, I did this, that, and the third, but to be able to give back to your community and be a positive impact on your community, man, it's a beautiful thing. It's something that I hold close to my heart. And, you know, till I'm gone, that's what I'm going to continue to do. And obviously, like, you know, we always talk about, if all you can talk about is like, AB was a great football player, then I did something wrong. You know, I want to leave a lasting impact on the community where the youngsters, man, they be like, okay, AB, man, he was always here in the community. I always saw him. He always talked to me when I saw him. I could touch him. He is who I am right now, you know, and I think that's the biggest thing for me, man, so.
You're talking about the community. I just reached behind me on the bookshelf and grabbed me Quiet Strength by Tony Dungy with really. Nathan Whitaker, former agent in the business, a former NFL executive, a buddy. I got to give him a shout out. But you were drafted by the Colts in 2006, and community, certainly a big part of what Tony Dungy has done. What did he mean for your career, and what did he mean for you as a person?
Man, just believing in me. And, you know, I talked to Bill Polian now when he said when he saw the tape, he took it to Coach Dungy's office. And Coach Dungy was like, man, hide that, man. We're going to try to – we can use him. You know, so for him to even have that belief in a 185-pound young man coming out of Howard, like, that means a lot to me. You know, again, like I just talked about, just give me an opportunity. And they gave me that. And being able to walk in the locker room and just see how he went about his business. And the year previous, he had just lost his son. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you can have a coach to sit up there in front of the room and say, hey, we're a family. We're going to do things this way. He can talk the talk, but when it comes down to it, do they really walk that walk? And Coach Dungy was that. Like, whatever he said, whatever he preached, he lived by that. So as a young man, you know, being able to have the opportunity to sit down and hear him speak every day, to see how he brought his family into the building, had his kids running around the building, had his wife, had his brother-in-law, like okay, yeah, he talking about family. He want this team to be a family. He's allowing our parents and family members to come to the Saturday practice, Saturday walkthrough. So that was just beautiful to me, man, just to see how he was a true leader. So
yeah, it made you guys feel like a family. It made you guys feel really like a family, man. And that's what I've always heard about Tony Dungy coached teams. Now, Twan, you over 1,300 tackles in your career, man. Like, you were a tackling machine. Every time I've seen you play with a lot of passion. So I guess my next question is, how hard was it for you to step away from this game, man? Because, you know, sometimes when we leave this game, we don't always think there's something else for us to do. You played 14 years. It's been your life since you probably can remember. How hard was it for you?
It was tough. And I don't even think it was more so on me playing the game, but I think it was leaving the locker room. You know, I think it was leaving the locker room, getting on those plane trips, playing in between, playing the craps, laughing and joking, having those rookie nights. I think that's what I was going to miss the most about it, because physically, you know, we knew at some point in time, we're going to have to close them curtains at some point in time. We're going to have to hang those cleats up. And I think we always know when that time is coming. And I kind of started to realize when my time was coming. So I was at peace with leaving the game, but really, and even now at this point where I've only been out, you know, a couple of years, it's like you're missing that camaraderie. And you always hear guys who retired before you be like, man, I miss it. You know, I love my family. I love my kids. I love the wife. But it's just something different where you can get around the guys and just shoot the shit. And I think that was one of the things that I knew was going to be toughest for me just because of just the brotherhood that we had in the locker room.
One pick six in your career. Do you remember it?
Damn. Yeah, I do, man. against the San Diego Chargers in Levi's Stadium. I think it might have been like a Sunday night game or Monday night. But, yeah, only pick six, man.
Well, the way you shook your head, though, you had to have been close to a few other ones, right? Do you remember a couple that if I made this move?
A few. If I would have just caught them, I would have been strong. You know? It hit me in my chest, hit me in my face, man. I got, you know, just me and the quarterback. But, you know, football guys knew all the best of me.
Oh, man, that's hilarious, man. So, all right, if there's one thing that you could kind of changed by, about your career, would you change anything?
Nah.
You want it exactly the way you got it, huh?
It was supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be that way. So me being selfish, I could be like, yeah, I wish I would have played my entire career in Indy. Mm-hmm. But obviously it was something, you know, that was in my roadmap along my journey that it was supposed to be like, look, you know, you made an impact in Indy. You know what I'm saying? On the field and off the field in the community, you did what you're supposed to do is take the show on the road somewhere else. You know, so me being selfish, yeah, I could be like, yeah, I wish I could have done that. But I think my journey was my journey. It went the way it was supposed to go. So I'm happy with that, and I'm at peace with that.
And Mike Robb called you a tackling machine. You referred to yourself as a 185-pound kid coming out of Howard. tackling is a mentality. So I'd imagine I'd be lying if I said I broke down your college tape. So I'm going to have to trust your memory on this one. I mean, I'm sure you always were physical. Did that develop over your career? Did you work to get stronger? I mean, how did that kind of come about?
Nah, man, that was just something that was in me. I played middle linebacker in high school.
What?
I was 165 pounds.
You ain't play no damn middle linebacker at once. What high school you went to out here, man?
Shoot, 5'8".
Okay, I got you.
You know, so I played middle linebacker, and it was crazy because a lot of people would say that. But my defensive coordinator at the time, he went to play at JMU out of school, and he was like, look, one of my hardest hitters. You don't care. You'll go in there, stick your nose in, and you can run sideline to sideline. He taught me how to read the guard pulling. He said, that's all you need to know in high school. If you see the guard pull, follow that guard and follow that fullback.
Lead you right to the ball, baby.
Every time. And then, you know, when I went to college, man, I love to hit. I love to tackle. I love to hit. And coming out of OTAs my rookie year, my coach, Coach Allen Williams, was like, look, you playing the hell out of the ball. You making all your checks. He said, the only thing you're going to have to do is when you put them pads on, come training camp, see if you can tackle. He said, if you can do that, you'll make the team. I went home. It's cake.
I'm in there.
I'm good. I'm good.
That's one thing I know I can do.
I'm good. So
that's dope. Now you talked about the Super Bowls, Super Bowl appearances. I only been to one, and mine was late in my career. So, you know, I spent the first 7 years of my NFL career chasing it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yours is a little different. You caught your ring on the beginning. You know what I'm saying? How difficult was it to chase that, you know what I'm saying, to continue to chase that after you had it early in your career? And did you think it would come back easy? You know
No doubt. No doubt. No question. Like, you know, I walk in the locker room and I win a Super Bowl my first year. Oh, I'm about to get like 4 or 5 of these things. Easy. Easy. So we go back my fourth year and we lose against New Orleans and Miami. So 7 out of my 8 years, we make the playoffs in Indy. I leave Indy. I don't see the playoffs again. So now it's like, you know, my first seven seasons out of my first eight, like I knew I'll get them extra checks. Mm-hmm. I was getting everything. Like everything was going to be good money. So again, leaving Indy, going to San Fran and Arizona, New York, it was just like, man, like just give me one more chance. But like you said, just chasing it, wanting to get that feel, wanting to get that playoff experience, man. But as they always say, it's not always green on the other side, man. So
Had to do it.
Bro.
We talked about how you're working with some or talking to some top-tier athletes about heading to HBCUs. What about guys leaving college going to the NFL? Whether it's those same guys that you're helping get to those schools or whatever, what are you telling them about what life is going to be like on the other side after the draft or signing as an undrafted free agent?
Good question.
Man, it's tough. All I can tell them is the truth, right? Like whether you want to hear it or not, everybody's home setup is different. So, you know, you got a lot of guys leaving for different reasons or family looking at them kind of different. You know, some guys can kind of go into the league and just be like, you know what, you know, this is a dream of mine and I'm trying to live out my dream. But, you know, you got some guys that's like, man, my family got to eat. Like, lights are cut off or, you know, We don't get too many mail. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the structure is different for different guys. So, for me, it's like, look, when you hit this process, it's going to be a lot of people coming out the woodworks. Mike Rob, as you know what I mean? So, a lot of time I tell the guys, like, use your street smarts. Like, don't make this something harder than what it is. Like, if you were on the streets and somebody walked up to you and you just didn't find, you ain't feel their vibe or their aura, you will distance yourself away from that person.
Yeah.
Do the same thing here. Like, use your street smart. Just because the dude got a suit on don't mean
he ain't trying to get over on you.
Exactly. So, like, just use your common sense. Use your common sense and use your street savvy or, you know, what have you. You know, you move in life, but again, but it's like it's one hell of an experience.
And listen, you get. Yeah, I hear coaches all the time. Trust your talent. You deserve to be here. Your talent. Same kind of thing on the mental side, right? You know, trust what got you.
Yeah, trust. Yeah, yeah. And then again, it's one hell of an experience. Like you couldn't tell me. Like, coming from Newport News, like, Twan, you can play 14 years in the league. You're going to travel all over the world. You're going to meet the people that you were able to meet. So, again, I tell the guys, be ready so you don't have to get ready. Because when that time comes, when your name is called, if you're not ready, your name might not ever get called again. So, you know, control what you can control is the main thing that I tell the guys. Control what you can control. The things you can't control, hey, let that fall wherever they may fall. But the biggest thing, control what you can control. And, you know, you might have a long career.
I hope those guys.
That's so dope, man.
Yeah, and I hope those guys realize, you know, when they have the chance to talk to you, what's at their disposal, because it's a wealth of knowledge, it's a wealth of experience. And listen, you know, I've had limited interactions, but we've had the chance to talk, and I can tell you're a great guy, despite the fact that you're sitting in a chair. You can't see this unless you're watching this on the promo. He's got like a villain chair, like the kind of chair where you're going to whip around give the guy the hero the big smile. That's a great
look. I feel some type of way. I want to get this chair out of here so bad.
You hit a spark, Jeezy.
I want to get rid of this shit so bad. They thought it was a good idea to have it in here, but trust me, if we do this again within the next month or so, you won't see this behind me, baby.
Well, hit up Dr. Evil. I'm sure he can use a good chair. That's right up his alley. It's a power chair. That's what it is.
Yes, it is.
So you say.
Antoine Bethea, thank you so much for stopping by. We had a blast, man. We had fun. We learned. We talked. Mm-hmm. I hope we get the chance to do it again. You got an open invite here from me and from Michael Robinson. Thank you very much. That'll do it this episode of Total Access, The Locker Room. For more insight with a locker room point of view, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.